It's KUOW 94.9 Seattle. This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds. Rising levels of CO2 are corroding the seas. It's called ocean acidification. It's already threatening oyster beds in the Northwest. And scientists think the impact of ocean acidification is going to be amplified and happening more rapidly than they even previously thought. The Seattle Times this week has a major print and online series on this issue called Sea Change at the Pacific's Perilous Turn. And Craig Welch reports on the environment for the Seattle Times. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And first of all, props for doing a subject that takes six syllables to even just the second word. This is a wrangly topic. Maybe you could just break down for us, what is ocean acidification?
You bet. It's actually surprisingly simple. The same carbon dioxide that comes from our cars and power plants goes up into the atmosphere, and the same thing that actually causes climate change, these carbon dioxide emissions, actually a quarter of them end up in the ocean, and that changes the chemistry of the ocean, and it makes it slightly more acidic. And the more carbon you get in the ocean, the more acidic it becomes.
So that CO2 in the sky ends up in the water and makes that more acidic.
Exactly.
Now, in the popular mind, when we think of global climate change, we might think of South Sea Islands sinking or disappearing glaciers or more serious storms. We don't necessarily think of the ocean, and your story makes the case that we're really seeing the impact of this there now, maybe more so than other places.
That's true, and most surprisingly, we're seeing it globally. We're seeing it here first. There's something about the way the waters circulate in the Northwest that the upwelling waters from when the wind blows off the coast and brings the deep water up to the surface where our oysters grow. That's the reason that we're seeing it before any place else in the world.
And you mentioned oysters. It's the oyster farmers that are really having some trouble with already, and they've had to radically change the way that they do business, haven't they?
That's true. Beginning about in 2005, they started noticing that oysters were dying out in Willapa Bay. And over the next several years, they started thinking, well, maybe it's a bacteria, maybe it's all these other problems. And it turns out that the chemistry of the water was changing. And when they worked in the hatcheries to actually change the chemistry back, that was the only thing that would allow the oysters to survive. So they were actually able to eliminate all the other possible causes. So now they're actually timing their oyster growing so that when they work in the hatcheries, they're trying to make sure they do it when the pH is at the appropriate time, when the wind is not blowing. They also sometimes like crush up oyster shells to add more alkalinity to the water. They're doing all sorts of sort of fix-its to get around this problem.
And you also recount how one company is actually starting their oysters in Hawaii.
That is correct. There is the Nisbet family out in Willapa Bay actually invested a bunch of money to go build their own new hatchery in Hawaii, where they draw water from underground in a saltwater aquifer, because they knew that sooner or later this problem was just going to continue to get worse. And so they actually shipped those baby oysters back to Willapa Bay to grow them.
And that's part of the story you tell, Craig. It's happening sooner rather than later, unexpectedly.
Absolutely. And that's true everywhere. It's particularly true in the cold places, in the Arctic and Antarctica. They've now discovered that melting sea ice actually compounds the problem, because the melting water, when you melt the sea ice, it actually exposes more water to carbon dioxide so it can absorb more. And then it also exposes more water to sunlight, which allows more things to grow and more things then die, which creates more carbon dioxide in the bottom of the cold water.
So what other measures are these people who are growing oysters thinking about as they look near term? Starting oysters in Hawaii is one thing. Do they have other plans?
You know, right now, for example, this week, the one of the liaisons for Taylor Shellfish, which is the biggest oyster grower out in our waters, is in Vienna right now talking to an international body about trying to do something about carbon emissions, because I don't think they know what they can do next.
It affects our oysters now, but you also report that king crab and snow crab, two of the biggest, most lucrative fisheries in the Northwest, may be next.
That's true. The scientists who study these things actually did not expect that they would find trouble with crabs, because crabs are generally very hardy. But when they exposed baby red king crab to carbon dioxide emissions that they thought they would see later in the century, they died. And not just many of them, but all of them died before they were 200 days old. And that had everybody at NOAA who deals with this fishery concerned about what that means for the future.
Have there been any effects yet on the king crab catch?
Not that they can tell, but they also discovered, and that, you know, they did this research over the last couple of years and published it early this spring. Just this summer, they figured out that the chemistry of the water is actually changing so much faster that it's right now, at some parts of the year, is reaching levels that they saw were causing the kind of problems with king crab. The only thing they predict at the moment, the only thing they assume at the moment, is that they are just not, it's not happening at a time of year when the crabs are that susceptible.
Wow. So are the king crab fishermen and the snow crab fishermen trying to come up with a plan B? Is there a plan B?
You know, right now, the king crab fishermen that I've talked to are, they are in agreement that the science poses trouble for them. They're hopeful that they don't see any trouble, any actual problem with the fishery down the road. But they don't really know what Plan B is yet. I mean, that's the difficulty with all these things. It's happening so much faster. You know, this time last year, they had no clue that this might even be on their radar.
Yeah. Now, some people might be listening, Craig, and they're thinking, I don't like oysters, and king crab's too darn expensive for me anyway. Why should I care about ocean acidification?
Well, if you live in this part of the world, there's plenty of reasons you should care. For starters, perhaps the biggest concern with ocean acidification is how it changes the food web. You know, there are little tiny animals at the bottom of the food web called pteropods. They're basically little see-through shelled creatures. In Antarctica right now, these creatures are dissolving because the water is becoming so much more acidic. They're dissolving already. And they're dissolving when the water chemistry in Antarctica is not as bad as it sometimes gets off the coast of Washington. So there are researchers at NOAA who have spent some time trying to model what all these changes at the bottom of the food chain mean for the fish we do catch. And what they've discovered is, you know, all these models are very rough at the moment, but what they've discovered is that it appears to them that in the future, most of the commercial fish that we catch would likely go down unless they see some kind of adaptation strategy or something.
And you report that 1 billion people on Earth are relying for things from the water for their basic nourishment.
That's true. And for us, it's largely an economic issue. In other parts of the world, it could be a food security issue. And that's just the beginning. If you have a food security issue with people who live right off the marine food web, that also is going to end up changing food prices for other commodities around the world.
This is The Record on KUOW. I'm speaking with Craig Welch, who reports on the environment for the Seattle Times, where they're doing an excellent series this week called Sea Change, the Pacific's Perilous Turn. You report on a place, I believe it's in Papua New Guinea, that actually replicates what the future conditions might be in many other parts of the ocean. What is that?
It's a really amazing spot. So this is in the southern part of Papua New Guinea where they have volcanoes and earthquakes, and there are cracks that have appeared in the bottom of the water just underneath where coral reefs used to exist, and you have natural carbon dioxide vents. So the carbon dioxide from the earth just bubbles up. And so what you have is, in this particular area, you have carbon dioxide in the water that has basically changed the water chemistry to almost exactly what people expect it to be like in 50 or 60 years for the rest of the oceans. 300 yards away, you have totally normal water with no carbon dioxide influence. So they can literally go to look at this great, normal, healthy reef, swim 300 yards away, and compare what the carbon dioxide-rich waters and how different the marine life is in that area. And they can look at it and say, well, this is what it looks like today. This is one possible future in 50 to 60 years.
So the question kind of is, what is to be done about it? I had a chance to talk to Nathan Myhrvold, who has lots of big ideas. One of them was to deal with global climate change by sending some stuff up in the atmosphere that would cloud it over and kind of prevent some of the CO2 from being in the atmosphere. I got a call the next day from an oceanographer who said, well, that might help on that, but it's not going to help on this issue, ocean acidification.
I've actually heard that same story before from other technocrats, people who are really good at thinking about science, and they forget that CO2 poses more than one problem. And so if you want to do something about the oceans, there are also people looking at geoengineering solutions, trying to figure out something you can do to add things to the water to change particular stretches of coastline. But those are all in the planning stages and just sort of people are still doing research. You know, the biggest solution is doing something with carbon dioxide emissions. And, you know, That's
a tough one.
I know, and I'm certainly no expert on how you do that, but that doesn't appear to be any other easy, obvious answer.
So there's nothing really on the horizon when it comes to this idea of bioengineering to deal with this problem?
One of the other stories we're working on will actually explore what the other options are.
Right.
I'm embarrassed to say I haven't done enough reporting to answer that question for you.
Well, good.
But hopefully down the road.
We'll wait for you to do that so we can read it. It's a great series, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
A lot of people.
Thank you so much. Craig Welch reports on the environment for the Seattle Times. Don't miss that. Sea Change, the Pacific's Perilous Turn. It's in the paper this week. This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds.